help me invite our speaker this evening. Her name is Patty, and she is from York, Pennsylvania. Patty.
Hi, my name is Patty Burke, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 10th, 2002. So yesterday I had 16 years of sobriety. Miracle. Absolute miracle. I really do, without a doubt, owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really, really super crazy. I have 21 days off of cigarettes. So I'm really freaking nuts, okay? And so, plus I've had a lot of, I've had really three deaths recently that really rocked my world. So I'm like a mixture of nuts and crazy and sad, you know. But I do know one thing, that I have no desire to pick up a drink, you know. That's the furthest thing from my mind, you know. Big Book is very clear when it says, nothing will assure immunity against drink as it tends to work with others when all else fails. And that has been my experience many, many times, you know. And, my home group is White Rose. We meet Friday night at 8 o'clock. It's a one-hour speakers meeting. I have a position in that home group. I'm the speaker-getter, and in spirit of rotation, I've been the speaker-getter for about 14 years. I keep trying to give it away, but I keep getting it back. And I have a sponsor. His name is Steve Farnsworth. He knows he is my sponsor. And I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring other men and women in this program, and for that I'm forever grateful. So... I wish I would have started drinking when I was in kindergarten. I think I would have got here a lot sooner, you know, because drugs are not part of my story. So I drank for a really long time, you know, and I think if I would have started in kindergarten, I would have got here earlier. But I didn't start drinking until I was 14 years old, but I definitely need a drink in kindergarten. I had this father who was a drunk, and he was amazing. He was so fabulous. He was funny. He was sarcastic. I loved him. He was drunk around the clock. I loved him. The first person I felt spiritually connected to until I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's probably because he suffered from the same spiritual illness as me. And I had a mother who did not drink, and she probably needed a drink, but she didn't. And so I was really attracted to what was going on in my dad's world. You know what I mean? I would watch him. I would watch him change, you know, and I'd watch him, If you can actually see it, the weight just lift off of him, you know what I mean? And he was funny, and he had friends, and I just loved it, you know? I loved him, and I loved the way alcohol affected him, and I couldn't wait to grow up for me to experience that. And, you know, my dad would drink all night long, and he'd get up, and he'd start drinking coffee, and he'd go to work, right? And I would get up in the middle of the night with my dad because I loved him so much. And he'd be watching black and white movies, and he'd be drinking beers. And I'd go in the kitchen, and I'd get him a beer, and I'd pop it open. I'd drink as much as I possibly could until I got into the living room. And I don't remember the effects produced by alcohol at that young age. I just know I did it a lot. I did just about every single night, you know. And my best friend, I met her on the bus stop one Monday morning, and she said, I drank this weekend. And she said, we can't wait. We got to go now. And I was like, all right. You know, and so we jumped on a bus, and we went to Jersey City, where her cousin was, where she drank on the weekend. I was born and raised in Jersey. So we took this bus to Jersey City, right? And I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get there, right? And we get to Jersey City, we get to her cousin's house, and we start drinking. And what happened is I experienced my very first spiritual awakening. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I could breathe easy. I could look you in the eye. I could care less what you thought about me. You know, I couldn't believe that I wouldn't do this sooner. You know what I mean? And then I became extremely seductive. My clothes came off, and I went into a blackout. And that's how I drank from the very beginning to the very end. Except towards the very end, I wasn't so seductive, but I was definitely naked. And I got to tell you, that's how powerful alcohol was for me, and how freeing it was. I just wanted to be naked. And it wasn't like I had this fabulous body that I wanted to show off, because my whole life I've always looked like SpongeBob. I've been square and flat with skinny legs, you know what I mean? So, but it was just so powerful and so freeing, and I loved it, you know? And I was never going to wait for anybody ever to offer me alcohol ever again. I lived up the street from this liquor store, and I would take my lunch money every single day and get all men to buy me alcohol. So I was a daily drinker from the very beginning, and I had to, because my head would attack me so bad, and I was so tight on the inside that that I needed to drink every day, you know. And when I was 14 years old, you know, when you're 14, you get in a lot of trouble when you're, you know, you're in a blackout and naked and drunk, you know what I mean? And I didn't care. It was well worth it for me to be be okay, even if it was only for a brief moment until I, you know, overshot that mark. But I was 14 years old, and I stood out in front of a liquor store to get some old guys to buy me alcohol on Memorial Day weekend. And I went to the beach, you know, because I was raised by the Jersey Shore, and I was roaming around the beach, and I was playing a little bit seductive at this point, you know. And I ran into these two guys. And these two guys asked me if I'd like to go drinking with them. And I was like, absolutely, you know, I'm drinking on lunch money. Of course I'm going to jump in a car with people I don't know. You know, and so I jumped in a car with these two guys, and I had no idea who they were, nor did I care, because I knew I was going to be drinking, you know. And what happened that day absolutely changed my world. You know, what happened that day is I wound up getting brutally beaten and raped. Doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is that I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. Once I put any alcohol in my system, it sets off a phenomenal craving, and once I start, I can't stop. And when I do stop, all I do is, think about it until I pick it up again, right? But this day I became a victim, right? And I convinced my mother that if you were raped at the age of 14, that you would need to drink too. And it was a long time ago. It was 49 years ago. And so my mother didn't know what to do. So she let me drink. You know, I wasn't allowed to drink the way I wanted to, but I was allowed to drink enough to take the edge off. You know, and I really believe I didn't have any suicide attempts throughout high school because I was allowed to drink, you know. And and my life was like crazy, and they started sending me to psychiatrists and counselors and all kinds of crazy shit, you know. And they started putting me on medications, and they would tell me stuff like, now, Patty, if you drink on this medication, it's going to triple the effect of alcohol. I was like, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm going to take these meds, you know what I mean? And I'm a mess, you know what I mean? I'm a complete mess, and my family really doesn't know what to do with me, and I'm in all kinds of, you know, counseling, and I'm just crazy, you know. And so I finally graduate high school. I get a note from one of my psychiatrists saying that if I didn't graduate high school, that I would have a breakdown. And they just really wanted to get me the hell out of there. You know what I mean? I was like a mess. They didn't want me in the school anymore. So they let me graduate. I graduated with no credits, you know. I graduated the very last of my class. And I walked across that stage, and I was drunk, and I fell off that stage, and my mother was not impressed. And I got home, and I guess she went to my father, and my father came to me, and he said, Patty, it's time for you to go. We did our part. You're 18 years old. You graduated high school. You have to go. And so I left. I was, like, happy to get out of there, you know. I left home, and I moved in with a go-go dancer, and I was supposed to watch her some while she danced that night, and what happened is my life became very unmanageable because I didn't have my mother to manage my life anymore, and I started getting arrested, and I started thinking, like, I didn't even have a reason and purpose for living except for to drink, you know, and I felt like I needed to do something with my life, and so what I decided I really needed to do was to have a baby. Because if I have a baby, I'll have someone to always love and someone that will always love me. I'll have a reason and purpose for living. And that was my plan. I never, ever wanted to get married. I've been married twice, never changed my name. Never wanted to be married. But I did want to have a baby. So I went to this party, right? And I seen this really dumb guy across the party, right? And I want to explain to you how dumb he is. Like, I didn't even know who he was, right? And I said to somebody, I said, what is his name? And they're like, Kevin. I'm like, Kevin, get in the car right now. And he just came, you know what I mean? Got in the car, right? Right? And so I get pregnant, right? My mother's devastated. Raised Catholic, you know, my mother's devastated. She thinks I need to marry this guy. I'm like, I'll marry him. I'm not going to stay married to him. But I'll marry him, right? And One of my many, many psychiatrists, one of them just happened to be a reverend, so my psychiatrist married me. And so this is how my dad describes me. My dad said that if I was in Shea Stadium and it was filled with brain surgeons, that I'd pick up the hot dog vendor. And that's exactly what this guy was, a hot dog vendor, right? And so I married this guy, right, and I had this little girl that I would tell you I love with all my heart and soul, and I just wanted to be the best mom, right? And he got a job one day, and I took off because I didn't like him. I just still don't like him. And I'm not even resentful. I swear to God, I'm not. But I just don't like him, you know? And so I took off, and I left him, and I had this little girl, you know, that I love with all my heart and soul, and what I wanted to do is just be the best mom. And really what she had was she didn't have a mom, because I would drop her off with that hot dog vendor every single night after I got off from work, and I would go out and drink, you know, and I was never available for her, you know. And I took this little girl through a lot of stuff, you know. I had no business having a baby, you know. But I could tell you that I really believe that she did save my life, because I really did kind of calm down my drinking, you know. But that didn't last too long before I was back to where I started from. And then my life started getting unmanageable again. I started getting arrested and DUIs, you know. And I started feeling like what I really need is one more baby. If I have one more baby, I'm going to be okay. See, I don't know what I have is a spiritual illness that no human power is going to solve my problem. I have no idea. Because I could tell you, if human powers were going to solve my problem, I would have 33 years sober today. And so I get pregnant, and you know, and I'm really good with these first two pregnancies. I don't drink at all, you know, and I have this baby, and you know, I just, my life is, it's not working. I think what I need is just one more baby, you know. So I get pregnant with my third daughter, and the first two pregnancies I didn't drink at all. So I do know it's a progressive illness, because this third pregnancy I can't stop drinking. I would wake up every day and I would just try to have just one drink just to take the edge off. And what would happen is I would need the second drink more than I needed the first. And I would need the third more than I needed the second. And pretty soon I'm in a blackout. And I'm scared to death. I don't know what I'm doing to this little girl inside of me, you know. And I try so hard not to drink each and every single day. And I just can't. I have to drink, you know. And so I have prayer services going on all over the country, and I have the priest bless the baby inside me, and I have holy water blessed by the Pope. I was very Catholic, you know. And I could do all those things, but I couldn't stop drinking. You know, and the day she came, I was terrified to have her, because I didn't know what I did to that little girl, you know. And my best friend, she came with me, and when the doctor delivered the baby and he went to hand the baby to me, I wouldn't take her because I was scared. Because I didn't know what I did to that little girl. And they handed her to my best friend, and when I seen my best friend smile, I knew that baby was okay. And I got to tell you, I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I knew it. Every day I would just try so hard not to drink, or so hard just to have a drink to take the edge off, you know. And of course, it would set off that phenomenal craving, and once I started, I couldn't stop, you know. And so I knew I was powerless, and I knew my life was unmanageable. I mean, I told you, like, when I tell you I started drinking in kindergarten, I'm not lying. Like, I was messed up in kindergarten, you know. And so my life has been unmanageable since kindergarten, you know. And it's, I don't think it has anything to do with all the DUIs and the accidents and all the states and the husbands. I think it has everything to do with the stuff that goes on the inside. The stuff they talk about on page 52 of the big book, you know, the bedevilments. You know, my personal relationships were a mess. I was put in misery and depression. I couldn't seem to make a living. I was filled with fear. I couldn't seem to be a help of nobody. All that stuff was going on with me for years and years, and I could never put words to it. And I could never tell anybody just how crazy I felt on the inside, because I would be afraid they would lock me up, you know. So I knew that my life was unmanageable, and I knew I was powerless over alcohol. But I tell you, it took me a lot of years to concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, like it talks about on page 30 of the big book. And I wound up marrying my two youngest daughter's father. He was a chef, so he's an upgrade hot dog vendor. And then he was like a good chef, you know. He would send his resume, they come and they pack us up and they move us to whatever resort he was going to work at. And we get to the resort, and I didn't want to be married. And I didn't like him either. And so what I would do is, like, I would sleep with the whole kitchen staff. I'm only kidding. I never slept with the old guys. And he'd be a little horrified, you know what I mean? And he'd send out his resume, and he'd pack up the kids, and he'd go off, and I'd stay behind. And I'd play with the little boys until I started missing my kids, and I'd follow behind. And that's how I lived for a really long time. And my relationship with my ex-husband was very abusive, and I just told you what kind of wife I am. So it's not like I was this prize wife, you know what I mean? But he was very abusive. He was mentally and physically abusive. And I knew one thing, if I pushed him hard enough, he would either beat me up or he'd lock me in a room and scream at me 3 hours and tell me what a piece of crap I was. And then he would feel really bad and he'd leave me alone for a week. And I could drink the way I wanted to drink for a week. And I was willing to take a beating to drink the way I needed to drink. And also what I would also do is I would fill up vases with fake flowers filled with vodka all over the house, just in case he did take away my vodka. I would have a backup, you know what I mean? Because God forbid you take away that vodka, I'm a mess, you know? And so, towards the end of my drinking, we're living in Georgia, and we own this restaurant now, and I'm a mess, you know? I ran into this girl when I was living in Georgia, and she said to me, she said, you know, Patty, if you show up to an interview and you're stoned, and they hire you and you show up every day stoned, that's how people think you are. I thought that was the most amazing thing I ever heard in my entire life. I started drinking around the clock, you know what I mean? I figured, they'll think that's just how I am, you know? And I was drinking vodka, so you know you can't smell it, you know what I mean? So it's like perfect, you know? And so we got this restaurant, and I'm a mess, you know? And I'm having an affair, once again, with another young guy who works in our kitchen, and my husband's had it with me. And he comes home from the restaurant one day, and he drags me from the kitchen into the bedroom, and he gets on top of me, and he strangles me till I pass out. And I come to him, and he says to me, Patty, if you're afraid of me, tonight's the night to be afraid of me, because I'm going to kill you. And I got to tell you, I seen something in his eyes that I never seen before, and I knew he meant it. And he started strangling me again until I almost passed out, and he fell off of me, and it got away, and I called the police, and the police came, and they arrested him. And he has really high bail, and I have this restaurant to run, and I'm a mess, you know what I mean? It's Christmas time, and I start thinking, I think what my problem really is Georgia. I think I really need to get back to Jersey, you know? So that was my plan. I was going to go back to Jersey, and then the phone rang, and it was the police, and my husband was bailed out of jail, and he was coming back home to pack up his stuff. So I thought, tonight's the night, I'm going back to Jersey. I stopped and I got a 100-proof bottle of vodka. You know, I was going to pack up my kids in my car and I was going to head off to Jersey. And what happened was, I came to, and my house was filled with the police, and it was filled with the neighbors. And my husband was not only packing up his stuff, but he was packing up my little girl's stuff. And the police told me that my little girls were better off with him than a drunk as a mother. And they were absolutely right, because every day I would endanger my little girls' lives. I would run over railroad tracks, and I'd blow out the tires of my car, and I would hit trees. And my little girls were terrified each and every single day, you know? And I knew he had nowhere to go with those little girls, so I decided I was going to leave, you know? And I got to tell you, like, I love my kids with all my heart and soul, you know? And I never wanted to be that mother, you know. My favorite speaker, he's from California, and he talks about how he comes to on a bus with his little girl, and she's crying, and she's shaking, and she's holding her stomach, and he says to her, what's the matter, honey? And she said, Daddy, I'm so hungry, you forgot to feed me today. And so they stop at a rest stop, and he goes in, and he gets a bottle of wine, and he gets a sandwich, and when he gets up to the counter, he only has enough money for one, and he puts back her sandwich. And that's the kind of drunk I was. And I got to tell you, I love my kids. And if anybody messes with my kids, I will kill you. But if you put one drink in me, I will steal your food. And I knew he had nowhere to go, so I took off to St. Petersburg, Florida. And I got there, and I was, like, so relieved they were gone. And I was really relieved he was gone, you know. And so, because it was just, like, so hard, you know. And now I could really drink the way I wanted to drink. You know, and it got to the point that I couldn't go 20 minutes without a drink because I would shake so violently and my head and my heart would attack me so bad I wouldn't know what else to do but take a drink, you know. And I'm 80 pounds and I'm bruised from head to toe from falling and I'm bright yellow and I have this long hair and it's fallen out and I have bald patches all over my head and I had nowhere to go. And I wound up back in Georgia and I wound up moving into this crack hotel, you know, and the condition I'm in. When I can't go 20 minutes without a drink, I can't even work in the public anymore. And so I wound up doing things I never dreamed I would ever do, because that's not how I was raised. And every day was so hard for the things that I had to do each and every single day for a bottle of vodka. You know, and I just couldn't believe where I ended up, you know. And I didn't know that women drank like me, and I didn't know women that were doing the things that I was doing. Except somewhere, I thought I heard that people who are smoking crack are doing the things that I'm doing. So I figured I should start smoking some of this crack. I may feel a little better about myself, right? So that's what I tried to do. I tried to smoke crack. I was way too drunk to smoke crack. I could not coordinate the pushers, you know what I mean? And what happens, has anybody ever smoked crack in here? So, you know, like when you smoke crack, you get really paranoid, right? And you hide. Well, I would find you, right? So they hated me, right? They hated me. So you know, like, you're in rough shape. When the crackheads hate, you're not even smoking their shit. You know what I mean? They hated me. They're like, give her back the bottle. Get her the hell out of here, you know? And I don't tell this story a lot, but I'm going to tell it tonight anyway. So I came out of a blackout in this hotel, right, next door with this big guy, right? And he looks at me, and I don't even remember what was going on, but I come out of it, and he's all of a sudden, he's like, I think you're an undercover cop. Right? And when I tell you I'm a mess, and when I tell you I'm 80 pounds, like, I am 80 pounds, you know? But I guess he was, like, trying to get me to smoke the crack, and I couldn't coordinate smoking the crack, so he must have thought I was, like, an undercover cop. I don't know what he thought. But he took all his crack, right, and he flushed it down the toilet, and he threw me out, right? And so I went home. I went right next door, and I figured, well, I might as well take a shower, you know? And so I took a shower, and I came out, and I was, like, dripping wet, and I'm naked, and I walked out into my hotel room and my crack hotel, and it was filled with police, and they were coming to arrest me for a bad check that I wrote. And so I was nice to them. I was like, oh, why, hello, boys, you know? And I was, like, so, like, I didn't, like, put up a fight, so, like, I was so agreeable to get arrested. They didn't even, like, handcuff me or put me in the back seat of the car. They just took me out, and they put me in the front seat. And I see him, like, you know, peeking. You know how you just peek? He sees me jumping in the car in the front seat with the cops. So, and he packed his shit and got out of there. So I guess he really did think I was an undercover cop, but I wasn't. I was going to jail. So, so I can't handle the things that I'm doing, right? And across the street from this crack hotel is this car dealership, and the mayor owned it. And I had this big grand opening to my restaurant. I had, like, the priest bless the place, and I had the mayor cut the yellow ribbon. So I went over and I talked to the mayor, and he gave me a job detailing cars where it could be out in the parking lot, spraying hoses, seeing rainbows, you know what I mean? Drunk out of my mind. I didn't have to, you know, be in the public, you know? And so I stopped doing those things that I was doing, and I moved out of that crack hotel, and I moved into a trailer park, right? And things were looking up for me, right? And I came into work one day, and the mayor says, where are the keys to that van? Because we're selling that vehicle today. And I have no idea, but I had the keys to this van at my trailer. So he said, grab something off the lot. I grabbed this big red truck, and I went home to go get the keys. And I figured while I was there, I might as well have a few more drinks, you know what I mean? And then I realized, like, six drinks later, I better get back to work. So I start rushing to get back to work, and I come to, and the truck is totaled. And there's fire engines and ambulance and police and all kinds of craziness going on around me. And they get me into the ambulance, and they take me off to the hospital where they put 150 stitches in my face, and from there they take me off to jail. And that was my fifth DUI, right? And so when I got to jail, I was relieved, because I really, without a doubt, believed that the only way I could ever stay sober is if I was locked away. Because without a doubt, the state of New Jersey absolutely sent me to AA. You know, and I would go to those meetings, and I really believe that if you drink like me, you don't stop drinking, you know? And and so I just really didn't believe that AA worked. I just really thought that I just needed to be locked up, you know, because I knew as soon as I got out there, I'd be doing the same things. You know, my father's trying to bail me out of jail, and eventually he bails me out of jail, and now I'm back at this trailer park doing the same things I was doing in that crack hotel. And I got to tell you, my world is so small and so dark. And I am so tired, and I'm so lonely. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about the loneliness that only another alcoholic knows. And I really miss my kids, and I can't believe that I have to sell my soul every day for a bottle of vodka. And I gave those kids away for a bottle of vodka. And what happens is the vodka stops working, and it won't stop my head anymore. And I just don't want to sell my soul one more day. I'm just too tired, you know? And I got to tell you, I have always prayed. After I got raped, I said to my mother, I said, Mom, why would God let this happen to me? And this is what my mother told me, because this is what my mother believed. My mother said, Patty, God's not punishing you. God's just making you stronger. And I believed all these years as I'm making decisions based on self that are later putting me in the position to be harmed, I think I'm getting stronger to get to God. And I think God is so far out there that I have to pray through the saints to get to God. And I would pray to St. Jude. He's the patron saint of hopeless and despair cases. And I would pray to him all the time. And this day, I didn't say a prayer to St. Jude. I said a prayer to God. And I said, God, you got to help me because I can't get any stronger. And I took a bottle of Tylenol PM and I drank whatever vodka I had left. And I came to on June 10, 2002 in intensive care. And I know there's a God because God's the only one I asked for help that day. You know, and my father flew in because they told my father he's probably going to have to take me home in a body bag. And they took all kinds of tests, and eventually it came back that I had no kidney, no liver damage. I had none at all. And from there, they shipped me off to a mental hospital, not like a little psych ward, like a whole hospital. I loved it there. I really did. They're screaming and we're fighting over crayons. You know what I mean? I loved it. And they kept me there long enough till I could stop shaking, long enough till they can get me on a plane and get me back to Jersey where my sister has a rehab set up for me, you know. And I get off this plane and my brothers are at the airport and they're looking at me like, oh my God, she's dying, because the bloat is completely off of my body and you can see every single bone in my body. And I have the long hair with the bald patches and I'm yellow and I'm bruised, you know. And I swear to you, I'm thinking to myself, they are so jealous of me. I look like a model, you know. I'm not lying when I tell you this, right? I did. I thought I looked like a model with all the bones, you know. And so I get to this rehab, right? And I have 7 days in this rehab because that's all my husband's insurance will cover. And they want me to do workbooks and worksheets. And I lost the ability to read and write. And I was so embarrassed that I couldn't possibly tell them I didn't know how to read and write anymore. And so they're going to get me funded, and they take me up into the office, and they go through my workbooks and my worksheets, and nothing was completed. And they said I wasn't serious about recovering, that I needed to go. And I just started to cry because I had nowhere to go. And I couldn't tell them that I didn't know how to read and write anymore. And so what they decided to do with me is to send me off to York, Pennsylvania, to a recovery house. And I was willing to go because I had nowhere else to go. And I got to tell you, and I never wanted to go back to where I was. I never wanted to go through detox. I mean, I went through 3 natural births. It was way easier than this detox, you know. And I never wanted to sell my soul or give my kids away ever again, you know. And so I get to this recovery house in York, Pennsylvania, and I walk in the house, right, and there's this girl who lives there, and she's talking to somebody on the phone. She stops. She takes one look at me. She gets back on the phone. She's like, holy shit, this one's a real doozy. I think she has wet brain. I don't even know what wet brain is, but I know I got it, right? She knows, right? And so I'm showing up to meetings. I don't know, understand what anybody's talking about, right? I come back home to her. I'm like, are you sure I have wet brain? She's like, I'm pretty sure you have wet brain. She said, not only that, everybody's talking about you. And I knew, like, they were all looking at me. She said, they're all calling you Skeletor, right? And I'm a mess. And 16 years ago, right, there was these people from Baltimore coming into York, Pennsylvania, with the big book, and they were destroying AA, and you weren't allowed to get a big book sponsor from Baltimore. And this was the first time I was ever getting sober, so I was like playing by the rules and not being destroyed by these big book people. You know what I mean? So this guy, Gangster, introduces me to this woman who's going to be my sponsor. Gangster knows, right? And she's not using the big book, so I know I'm safe, and she's not from Baltimore, so I know I'm really super safe, right? And I guess I'm about 45 days sober at this time, and I am getting crazier by the minute, right? And she's telling me what you got to do is you got to write down every single person you've ever slept with. Can you believe that? I lived in a lot of freaking states. I was like, okay, I'm willing. You know what I mean? And I'm getting worse. Like, I'm getting so crazy. I start thinking, like, I'm probably just like a mental case. I haven't drank in like 40 days. I'm so crazy. So, like, questioning me, like, the 15-item or less aisle, questioning me on my items, I was meltdown. If I would have had a gun, I would have killed her. I'm throwing myself on the kitchen floor. I'm threatening to kill people in the house. I'm threatening to kill her, right? And I'm just getting worse and worse by the days, you know? And I can't sleep, and I have drunk dreams, you know? And nobody will hire me. I couldn't even believe nobody would hire me. And finally, I get this job at this Denny's, right? And, like, I'm embarrassed. Like, I'm embarrassed that I'm an alcoholic and I live in a recovery house. And I'm never going to tell a single soul in that place that I live in a recovery house and I'm an alcoholic, you know. And I'm standing at the hostess station one Saturday morning with another server, and walks this guy from Jersey, right? And I turned to her and I said, oh, my God, I slept with him and I didn't put him on the list. She's like, oh, my God, you keep a list? Horrified. I was like, you don't? She's like, no, I don't. You know, I was horrified that I said that in front of her, you know. So I get together with this woman to do this, like, fifth step thing, whatever it is, you know. And this is what she tells me. She says that I've harmed nobody. The only person that I've ever harmed was myself. And the reason I was the way I was is because I didn't bond with my mother, you know. And somehow I thought maybe that she might be a little bit wrong, you know. But I also knew that she wasn't using the big book, so I was safe, right? And so I'm daily threatened to kill her. Like, I'm always like, I'm going to kill you. I'm so crazy. And I think I must have scared her, you know what I mean? Because she called me up one day and she said, you know what? You got to get yourself a new sponsor. Because I think you have something different than I do. And she's right. I did have something different than she did. She's a problem drinker. She stops drinking and her life gets better. I'm a real alcoholic. I stopped drinking and my life does not get better. And I started going to some different meetings and I started hearing things in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started hearing people talk about the hole in the soul. And that's how I felt, like my whole life, like I had a hole in my soul. And I would hear people talk about how they can walk into a room full of people and how the lost and lone they felt. And that's how I felt my whole life, you know. And I didn't want to tell people that because I didn't want people thinking I was crazy, you know. And there was this one woman, and she absolutely glowed, and she talked about how she felt like the scum of the earth, and she didn't feel that way anymore, and she certainly didn't look that way. And I went up and I asked her if she'd be my sponsor. And she asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths, and I said, absolutely, I went to any lengths to drink. And she said to me, she said, you know what, Patty, people have been telling your whole life if you just stop drinking, you'd be okay. She said, and you stop drinking, you are definitely not okay. She said, drinking has never been my problem. Drinking has always been my solution. But now that my solution stopped working, what I needed was a new solution. She said, what I had was a spiritual malady, and what I needed was a spiritual solution. She said, everything in this world is going to come and go. The only everlasting thing is God. And she said, I must have a love affair with God, because there will come a day that the only thing that comes between me and a drink is God, and I better have a strong foundation. She said, everything I think and need and want, I'm going to put on that back burner. I'm going to learn how to live this way of life. And she talked about the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she said she was from Maryland. I swear to God, I had no idea that the big book and the book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the same thing, and I had no idea that Baltimore was in Maryland. If I did, I would not be sober today. I might have had a touch of wet brain, right? And so she said, I was going to get up every morning, I was going to say that third step prayer, I was going to help as many people as I could, and if I couldn't help them, I wasn't to hurt them. And she said, next we're going to launch on the rigorous course of action. I was going to start writing a personal inventory. And I wasn't going to do that. I mean, I already did that. And the only thing that proved to me I was a bigger whore than I thought I was. You know what I mean? So I wasn't doing that. I didn't like it. It didn't work. But I was going to get up every morning. I was going to say this third step prayer. I was going to, you know, I went off to work. I was so helpful. They were giving me awards. I'd come back to that recovery house. And I was like the mother of the recovery house. I took care of the kids, the house, you know. And I went off to a meeting and I stuck my hand out to somebody who had one day less than me. And I'd come back to that recovery house and I'd throw myself on the kitchen floor and I'd scream and I'd cry and I'd kick because I wanted to drink so bad. And everybody seemed like they were so happy, joyous, and free, and I was not. And everybody's families were coming back in their lives, and I hadn't seen my daughters in a year. You know, and I called her up and I said, I'm doing everything you're telling me to do. Meanwhile, I'm not. I'm not writing a personal inventory. But I think I am doing everything. I said, no, you know, and I said, And I said, this ain't working. I said, I want to drink. Everybody's kids are coming back into their lives. I haven't even seen my kids. I haven't seen my kids in over a year. And I said, and you know what? All I really want to do is just hug my kids for 5 minutes. And she said, you know what, Patty? You don't have to physically hug your kids. God can hug them for you. And I want you to pray about that tonight. And I said a prayer and I fell asleep and I didn't have a drunk dream. I had a dream. I walked into a room and all three of my daughters were there and I could feel them hug me. And then somehow, I don't even know how, even to this day, my middle daughter called me. She got my phone number. She called me 2 days later, and I was telling her about my dream. And she said, oh, my God, Mom, I had the same dream. So if God can bring me and my daughters together in our dreams, God could do anything. And I tell you, that obsession was finally lifted. And I did a fourth and fifth step out of the big book. Couldn't believe it was the problem. It was amazing. I thought it was the husband. I could not believe it, you know. And but what I did know is that I was the maker of all my problems, you know what I mean? And I could see exactly who I was. It was written in black and white right in front of me. I knew exactly who I was. And when I got together with her to do that fifth step, she could see in my face that I knew exactly who and what I was, you know? And she didn't need to point any of that stuff out because she could see I already knew, you know? And this is what she said to me. She said, Patty, things you did when you were out there doesn't make you who you are. They're just things that you did. She said, I probably needed to do what I did and drink what I did when I was out there. So when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never had to go back out. And she said, all those dirty, disgusting things I thought I did when I was out there were going to be my biggest gifts to help other men and women. And she's absolutely right. I do not regret my past, you know. And she sent me home to do 6 and 7, you know. And since the first time when I was 14, my head was completely silent, even though it was only for a brief moment, you know. And I reviewed those first 5 proposals, making sure I left nothing out, you know. And then I said that seven, I did my hour, said the 7-step prayer, gave it all to God. Good, bad, right, or wrong, I don't know. I just give it all to God. You know, I don't work on anything, but if I have major glaring stuff, like I'm stealing, then I'll do opposites. But otherwise, I just give it all to God, and God will take away whatever he sees fit. Because when I start working on stuff, that's when I'm still playing God. right? And then I start writing my step list. And I got to tell you, I hurt way more people than I resented. And as I'm writing my 8-step list, the state of Georgia is looking for me, and they want me back in Georgia for my 50 DUI and total in that truck. And so my sponsor, it looked like I was going to go to jail for a couple of years. So my sponsor said, we got to get you through the steps and get you through as many amends as we can. So when you get to jail, you'll be spiritually fit to carry this message. You know, so she said, well, the first state we'll hit is Jersey because it's the closest state, you know. And I tell you, I love my dad, you know, and I called, my first amends was going to be with my dad. And I called my dad. And I said, Dad, I'm coming to Jersey next week. And he said, you know what, Patty? He said, I really believe for the first time in your life you're going to be okay with this drinking thing. And he said, and I got to tell you, I'm really tired, and I feel like I live a life of a houseplant. Because my mother died when I was 25 years old from colon cancer, and my dad has been so sad, you know. And so I said, Dad, don't say that. Well, I'm coming to Jersey. We'll go hang out. We'll do stuff when I get to Jersey. And so I get to Jersey, and my first amendment is going to be with my dad. And my dad's not answering the phone. And finally, I get in touch with my brothers, and they said that my father had a stroke that morning, and he was in critical condition. He was paralyzed, and he couldn't even talk. So I called my sponsor. I said, I guess I can't do that amends. And she said, oh, yes, you can. She said, you're going to ask everybody to leave the room. You're not going to tell them you're sorry. You've been sorry your whole life. You're going to tell them you're wrong. And that's what I did. And my dad started to cry, and he did manage to say the words, I love you, and he died a week later. And I really believe my dad held on for me to get better before, so he can go home to be with my mom, you know. And I got to do the amends. I did so many amends, you know. But I got to do amends with both those hot dog vendors. And my first ex-husband, right, I said, is there anything that I can do to make this right? And he said to me, I want you to help me when I want to get sober, right? So I was like, okay. So this is the fifth time I'm helping him. This is the fifth and last time I'm helping him, right? I said to my daughter, my amends is done with him. This is the fifth time I'm helping him get sober. But now I think he has almost a year, so. And then I got together with that second hot dog vendor, and I was still married, and my sponsor, she was like kind of like a bitch, you know what I mean? Like, she didn't care, like, if I was tired or sick. She said, you drank when you're sick, get to a meeting. And she said I had to act like a married woman, you know, and I figured she was just jealous and she didn't want me trying out this sober sex, you know what I mean? But I did. I acted like a married woman, right? And I got together with this guy, this husband, and he said to me, he said, you know what, Patty, I really was going to kill you that night. The only reason I didn't kill you that night is because a bright white light came and hit me in the head and knocked me off of you. And I told you, I thought God was so far out there, and the whole time I've always been in the palm of God's hands, you know? And I went back to Georgia, and I had to go in front of this judge whose daughter was killed a year earlier by a drunk driver. And the mayor's mother was killed 10 years earlier by a drunk driver, so it didn't look good, you know? And my grand sponsor, God bless his soul. But I tell you, I really know that I have a strong foundation, and I'm sober today as a result of my grand sponsor, because he spent so much time with me, and he taught me how to read and write again. And he was so spiritual, and I mean, at the time, I would, like, get so annoyed with him. I would, like, want to kill him because he never shut the hell up. But I really miss him today, you know, and I've learned so much from him, you know. And he said to me, he said, Patty, the lawyers, the prosecutors, the judge, none of those people are in charge. God's in charge. And if you're supposed to go to jail, that's where you'll go. And I went in front of the judge, and she gave me 24 hours in jail. And they took me out of they handcuffed me, took me out of the courtroom, handcuffed me, and threw me into a holding cell with another prisoner, and she thought it was a lawyer. She thought it was a freaking lawyer. Can you imagine? You know? And so I spent that 24 hours in jail to talk about the 12 steps, God, in the big book, you know? And I got back to York, Pennsylvania, which did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, had a spiritual awakening as a result of that. And let me tell you, now that I was sober in York, Pennsylvania, people are going to get sober. They're going to get sober. I'm going to make sure of it, right? And I was, like, on fire. Like, I'm trying to take everybody in Denny's through the 12 steps. None of them are sober, but they all need a spiritual awakening. And if I got a spiritual awakening, everybody's getting one. You know what I mean? Then I'm a mess, you know? And I get this apartment, right, and it has high ceilings. And I move Julie in, grab Julie out of a recovery house. She's not allowed to stay there. She needs to save the world with me, right? And so we get lumber, we're going to build a loft, we're going to start stacking the drunks, people are getting sober, you know what I mean? And nobody got sober except for us, you know, and they stole from us. I tell you, it was my favorite time of sobriety. That year was so crazy. I learned so much from making so many mistakes. It was so amazing. But what really happened was there was this little girl who was living with us, right? And she didn't want to be sober. But we were going to make her be sober, right? And then one day I came home and she was gone and this drug dealer called me and he said he had her. And she was out. I know today that she'd be dead. But back then, 14 years ago, he brings her back to me. And she's like gray and she's foaming at the mouth. And I call the ambulance and the ambulance come and they take her out of the apartment and they put her in the ambulance and they shoot her in the heart. And she comes alive and she's pissed. Now she's not high and she's alive. She's pissed and they take her off to the to the hospital, because that's what they did back then. No, they didn't have the Narcan, or if they did, they didn't use it. I don't know what they used. And so then she comes back home and she doesn't want to be sober. I'm like making her be sober, right? And I realized that I was making so many mistakes because what I was doing, I was denying her her pain. Because nobody denied me my pain, because if they did, I wouldn't be here today. So one of the hardest things I did was like throw her out, knowing that she was probably going to prostitute herself out that night. And she is sober today. She came back and she lived with us again for 5 years, you know. And then I meet this guy, right? And I get into my very first relationship. And I am madly in love, and he's in AA, and we're, you know, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is like a fairy tale come true. I'm finally love somebody. I want to get married, you know. And I'm sponsoring so many people, and I'm speaking all over, and I'm not really paying attention to, you know, to my spiritual condition, and I'm not really paying attention to my relationship with him. So my relationship starts failing, and my spiritual condition starts failing, and I can't possibly tell anybody that I'm dying spiritually, because how can I possibly tell anybody when I'm Miss AA that I'm dying? And we break up. And I take off to St. Petersburg, Florida. And I get to St. Petersburg, Florida, and I'm 7 years sober, right? And all the girls I sponsored in New York got new sponsors. My sponsor, because I switched to Steve when I had 2 years sober. and he's in Baltimore, you know. And I get to Florida, and I jump in the middle of AA, right? And I start taking over AA because I don't know what else to do but just take it over. So they're like, where'd this crazy bitch come from? Because, like, I'm, like, starting meetings, rearranging. Sarah comes, we're rearranging shit, you know what I mean? And and this is where I know nothing will assure immunity against drinking and intensive work with others when all else fails. Because I'm, like, sponsoring homeless shelters. I mean, I don't even know what half their name. I can't even tell you who they are. If I ran into today, that's how crazy I was then. Because I'm so consumed about this breakup, you know. And then I get a call from one of the girls that I still sponsor in New York. And she said that my ex-boyfriend is sleeping with one of my 19-year-old grand sponsees. And my heart is shattered. And I'm praying and I'm walking the beach, you know. And I'm so hurt, you know. I felt like my heart was going to break, you know. And I start praying, and I start regrouping, and I start telling God, I start coming up with a new plan. And my new plan was, I'm going to tell God what I need now. I'm going to tell him what I need. And what I think I really need is a brand new AA boyfriend. This time I need like a powerful, manly man, because last one was like an accountant. I need like a biker. That's what I really need is a biker. I need like a powerful, manly man, biker, speaker, powerful speaker, right? A week before I moved there, this guy from Cleveland, Ohio, the Mecca of AA moves there, right? And I hear him in the meetings, and he is powerful, right? And he calls me up one day, and he says, Patty, do you want to go for a ride on my Harley? I'm thinking, you're damn right I do. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, oh, my God, I am like God's favorite. You know what I mean? And so I go and meet this big burly guy. I go on the back of his Harley. We're going over the bridge with the moon and the palm trees and my hair blowing in the wind. I'm thinking, oh, my God, God loves me the best, you know. We get down to the beach, right? He says to me, you want to get pizza? Pizza's absolutely my favorite food in the whole world. I know it's a sign from God, right? So we get into the pizza place, and he grabs my hands, and he's looking me lovingly in the eyes. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's like probably going to ask me to marry him, right? And this is what he says to me. He says, Patty Burke, I've been watching in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you are so busy, you're absolutely dying. And he tore apart the third step. And he told me I had to stop playing God. Why? Because it didn't work. And how I was still making decisions based on self that are still putting me in the position to be harmed. And I wasn't in charge of the ex-boyfriends, the ex-husbands. I wasn't even in charge of my kids. That God was in charge. That God was in charge. You know. And I know one thing, that God loves us so much, me more. that God answers all our prayers. And God did not send that guy there to be my new AA boyfriend. God sent him there to 12-step me, and he knew I wouldn't hear from anybody but a biker. And he took me back through the steps, you know, and I had and my head started to calm. And I really, what I knew deep in my heart is what I wanted to do is get back to York, Pennsylvania, because that's where I belong. But I went to Jersey. I did a little tour of Jersey. Took it over just a little. Wound up in Maine. And then I wound up back in York, Pennsylvania. You know, when I get to York, Pennsylvania, I'm so happy to be back where I belong, you know. And my daughter, she's a mess. You know, she's on drugs, and I have two granddaughters, and I don't know what's going on with them. And I know I have to help her. Because you know what? I'm a sober mother, and I'm a sober grandmother, and I need to make sure my grandkids are okay, and I need to help my daughter. So I finally get her into York, and she's sometimes sober, sometimes not, right? Is it almost 9 o'clock?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. So I finally get my daughter there. She's sometimes sober, sometimes not. But she says to me one day, she says, Mom, want me to take your car and go off to the store and take the kids with me and get some milk so you don't have to go out today? I was like, all right. So she leaves at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. At 2:30 in the afternoon, I get a call from the state police that my daughter's in jail. She's totaled my car. And that my granddaughters are in Hershey Medical, and I have to get there immediately, and they won't even tell me if they're dead or alive. And the one road to get to Hershey Medical is the road that she had caused all these accidents. And Julie and I took hours to get there, and I got to tell you, if it wasn't for Julie, who carried me through this whole thing, I think I would have just died because I just couldn't handle how painful it was, not knowing if my granddaughters were alive, what was going on with my daughter, you know. And I get to the hospital, and they won't let me see my granddaughters because my granddaughters are alive, and they won't let me see them because they think I allowed my daughter to drive drunk. Finally, I convinced them that I didn't, and so that what they're going to do with me is they want me to be a foster mother now. In the state of Pennsylvania, they go back 40 years into your past, and I stabbed one of those husbands. I tried to explain to the police. I just poked them really hard in the face. They call that stabbing, you know. I've had all these DUIs. I had to jump through hoops. Even Julie, too. We had to jump, evaluated, fingerprinted, all kinds of craziness, you know. And if I wasn't approved to be a foster mother, then my grandkids were going to go into a home with people they don't know. And finally, I got the call. I was approved to be the foster mother. And so I was a foster mother 18 out of the 22 months, and I had my grandkids for 5 years. In that 5 years, my AA looked a lot different, you know. And my daughter would be in and out of our lives, and she'd steal from us, and she'd bring drug dealers in the house, and she'd disappear, and I wouldn't know if she was dead or alive, you know. And I couldn't handle it, and I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't eat, you know. And finally, I called her PO. He wouldn't answer. I went to his office, and I sat in his office for 2 hours until he seen me, and I said, you've got to arrest my daughter. And he went out, and he found her in 20 minutes, and he threw her in jail, and she was in jail for 10 months. And I tell you, and I slept every night, and I ate, and I didn't lose my job, and I knew she was safe. And from there, they put her in an 18-month Christian program, and the last year, my granddaughters went to live with her. My daughter has 4 years sober today, and she married a pastor of that Christian program, you know. And the thing is like, my whole life, all I wanted to do was be a mom, right? And my daughters never wanted to come back with me. They said, Mom, you have a lot of people who love in York, Pennsylvania, a lot of people that love, that you love, and they love you, and our dad only has us, and we're going to stay with our dad. And so my daughters would come every summer and every other Christmas, you know. And so when they would come, they'd be in the meetings with me, you know. And so one summer when they were with me, their father was getting sober in Florida. And so when they left to go back to Florida to start school, they said to their dad, they said, can we go to a meeting with you? He's like, I guess so. You go to meetings all the time with your mom. So they go to a meeting with him, right? And after the meeting was over, they said to him, they're doing it wrong. That's not how they do it in York, Pennsylvania. And what step are you on? You know? And so they fired the sponsor who wasn't going to take him through the steps and got him one that was going to take him through the steps, because this is the deal. My daughters know that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous works because they got a mother who's not a fallen down drunken slut today. They got a mother, a sober mother, who's a woman of grace and dignity that they can count on. I suit up and show up. I can look them in the eyes, you know. My granddaughters, I got to be a full-time mom for them for 5 years, and they were crazy, you know what I mean? But I tell you, I wouldn't have had it any other way, you know. And summer after summer, when my daughters would come, they would watch women come into our kitchen absolutely beat up and destroyed from alcoholism and watch these women go through the steps and watch these women come alive. So if you don't believe Alcoholics Anonymous works, you can ask my kids, because my kids know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know, as a result of the 12 steps of God that loves me the best, what I have today is a brand new life, not a patched up old life. I have a car. I have a license. Can you believe I have a license? In the third step it says, right? In the third step it says, we keep close to God and perform his work well. He will give us everything we need. I know I have a license because of God, you know? And my car's licensed and insured in more than one state. And you know what's a miracle? In the last 16 years, I have not lost a pair of underwear. Thanks for letting me share.